Well, there are not many things in life that we can be certain of. Of course, you've got death and taxes. We all know that. But maybe the other thing that has some degree of certainty is that life is almost constantly changing. We're moving from one phase of life to the next, and almost as soon as we get used to that part of our lives, it's time to move on to the next. And it seems like it's this time of year, perhaps more than any other. Maybe it's because it's springtime or the end of the school year and summer vacation. It does seem like this time of year we face these changes more than any other time. Now, we've got kids here who have just graduated high school. Of course, we've got other kids who are just moving into high school. I know that we've got a young man who moved here recently who wrapped up college and is beginning his profession in a new city, new congregation. There are newlyweds here. There are young couples that have their first child on the way. There are kids whose parents whose kids are moving away to college. And there are people who have either recently retired or are looking forward to retirement. So really, no matter what age you are, what period of life you're in, you're pretty much facing the next period of life right around the corner. So I want to talk about this morning. As the journey continues from one period of life to the next, with particular emphasis on our young people. I'll say some things about the adults, of course, people moving into different parts of life. But I want to focus today on our teenagers, on our college students, on our young couples and the challenges that they face, the dangers and the temptations that they're going to face as well. So let's get started then. The things that we would really like to say to our young people, because the Bible has a lot that we want to say to them. I have a lot that I want to say to our young people. Parents certainly have a lot they want to say to their children. And I know that the younger people have even younger people that they'd like to pass along some advice to as well. And that's one thing to remember. Practical application, my friends. Look at that. We're 2 minutes in. You already have a practical application. If you are just now graduating high school, or if you're the one moving into high school from middle school, guess what? There are kids looking up to you now. There are kids looking up to you. And if you've been married for 10 years... some people think that 10 years is a long time to be married, and you've got young couples looking up to you. You've got people looking up to you. There's always somebody who needs your wisdom and your advice, as meager as it might be. There's always somebody who could use a word of encouragement from you. Now, the Bible also has a lot of things to say to our young people as well. Passages that are particularly directed to young people. Open up to the book of Proverbs, first of all. And let's notice a few things here about the book of Proverbs. Of course, take note of the fact that from the very beginning of Proverbs, the writer makes it abundantly clear that this is a book written to his son. How many times do you see in just the first 7 or 8 chapters, "my son, my son, my son," at the beginning of a chapter or at the beginning of a paragraph? Notice chapter 3, beginning in verse 1. "My son, do not forget my teaching, but let your heart keep my commandments. For length of days and years of life and peace they will add to you. Do not let kindness and truth leave you. Bind them around your neck. Write them on the tablet of your heart. So you will find favor and good repute in the sight of God and man. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him and he will make your path straight. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and turn away from evil." What beautiful advice. What awesome advice. I think sometimes teenagers have the opinion that their parents are just giving them kind of like crusty old advice. You know, the dried out wisdom that they got when they were young. This is not dried out wisdom right here. This is not stale wisdom that's been sitting out on the counter overnight. This is living, breathing wisdom that breathes life into your life. It makes you vibrant when you read these words, "For length of days and years of life and peace they will add to you." The Bible has something to say. When your father and your mother are reading things out of the Bible and giving you godly wisdom, that means something, my young people. Go to chapter 4 now and notice verse 1. Hear, O sons, the instruction of a father, and give attention that you may gain understanding. For I give you sound teaching. Do not abandon my instruction. I gave you sound teaching, good teaching, healthy teaching, useful teaching, and true teaching as well. Maybe that's the challenge for parents and teachers and counselors, preachers and elders. We've got to give them sound teaching, good, quality, meaty, hearty teaching in the things that we say to them. But move on to Psalm 119, which I appreciate was read earlier in our worship service by one of our young men, Zach. It's fitting, isn't it? I couldn't have given you a better scripture to read, right? But it says in Psalm 119, beginning in verse 9, how can a young man keep his way pure? By keeping it according to thy word. And that's exactly what the writer of Proverbs is trying to tell his son. With all my heart I have sought thee. Do not let me wander from thy commandments. Wander from thy commandments. We're going to talk about this later on in the lesson, but the idea of when you finally move away from your parents' house, you get to go to a new city, start a new job, go to a new congregation, meet all kinds of new people, and you get the joy of anonymity and autonomy. Well, be careful. Be careful when you strike out on your own as the journey continues, that you do not wander away from God's commandments. For thy word I have treasured in my heart, he says in verse 11, that I may not sin against thee. And that's the key, young people. Young men, young women, watch out for sin. God's word is going to keep you true, and he'll keep you from that sin. But the New Testament also has some things to say as well. Go to 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 22. And notice here what Paul has to say to his young charge, Timothy. He says, now flee from youthful lusts and pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace with those who call on the Lord from a pure heart. It's not just flee, but it's pursue as well. And Paul said the same thing back in chapter 6 of 1 Timothy, as he says in 1 Timothy 6, verse 11, but flee from these things, you man of God, and pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, perseverance, and gentleness. And if that's not enough, I'm going to throw one more at you. Go to the book of Titus, and notice Titus chapter 2 and verse 3. Older women likewise are to be reverent in their behavior, not malicious gossips or enslaved to much wine, teaching what is good, that they may encourage the young women to love their husbands and to love their children. That takes encouragement. Isn't it interesting that loving a husband and loving your children is something that needs to be encouraged? I know that there are people where parenting and marriage and love, things come more naturally to some people than others. But in a lot of ways, you have to be taught to be a good parent. And you have to be taught to be a good husband and taught to be a good wife and taught to be respectful in your behavior in every area of life. These are things that need to be taught. And the best way to learn them, as Titus chapter 2 says, is to learn them from the older people around you. And he says the same thing to older men as well. In verse 6, likewise, urge the young men to be sensible in all things. Show yourself to be an example of good deeds with purity in doctrine, dignified, sound in speech, which is beyond reproach, in order that the opponent may be put to shame, having nothing bad to say about us. Although there is plenty of bad to say about young people, isn't there? There's plenty of bad things to say about high schoolers. Or middle schoolers, if you're a middle school teacher. There's plenty of bad things to say about college students. And plenty of bad things to say about millennials. The word millennial has almost become like a four-letter word to many adults now. Millennials. Scoffing at the millennials and the snowflakes and the people who think they're too special. There's plenty of bad things to say about young people. And Paul is telling Titus, we need to teach our young people to not give the enemy any excuse, not give the enemy anything bad to say about young Christian people.
There is a danger of low expectations, after all. When you are in middle school, high school, college, when you are a millennial, a 30-something, and you think you run the world, there is a danger of the low expectations of the people around you. Your parents, your grandparents, and their generation, leadership, people in authority, people who've maybe had a few too many bad experiences with an uppity, arrogant young person. So they set the bar way down here. Middle schoolers are always immature and whiny. Is Ashton here, by the way? She understands that, right? High schoolers are always obnoxious and disobedient and disrespectful. Hormone-driven, and that's all they care about. College students love to drink and slack off and ignore their work. Newlyweds think they know how to do everything, and new parents, don't get me started on new parents. They know everything there is to know about germs and the right kind of binky to use and whether you should use disposable diapers or the ones that clog up your washing machine. There's plenty of bad things to say and low expectations. And what do they say about low expectations? You tend to only meet the low expectations that are set for you, that you've accepted for yourself at least. And you know what? If the world thinks high schoolers are disrespectful and obnoxious and disobedient, the temptation is to be exactly that. And to go to college then. And everybody says, well, when you go to college, you've got to experiment with things. Everybody does it. Everybody drinks. You've got to sow your wild oats. Why not? Why not do all of the things that have made our rape culture exactly as bad as it is? Right? Everybody does it. And that's the expectation. So we tend not to rise above that. Here's the thing, though, young people. See it as a challenge. See it as a challenge from the world to rise above low expectations. At least that's how I thought of it. I can only speak from personal experience. But when you are a college student and you go away to a very liberal university the way that I did, there is an expectation, and it is very, very low. And I guess I took that as a challenge. I took it as a challenge to prove people wrong that college students don't have to be a certain way. That you don't have to drink to enjoy life. That you don't have to slack off to have a social life. That you can still believe in God and be committed to Him and faithful and be intelligent and rational and reasonable and useful to society. Take it as a challenge. Take it as a challenge that you don't have to be what they say you're going to be. And you can be better than that. And you can be a Timothy. And you can be a Titus. And you can be a King Josiah. You can be all of those things. Daniel in the lion's den. And you don't have to be what they say you're going to be. The low expectations that are set for you. Recall, of course, in the book of Genesis, there was a young man named Joseph, late in the book of Genesis, who was taken away, sold into bondage by his brothers because they were jealous of him. And he became a servant in Potiphar's household, nothing but a lowly Hebrew slave, a foreigner working in a powerful man's house. And there were some pretty low expectations that were set for him, at first at least, till Potiphar realized how valuable he was. But isn't it interesting, when Potiphar's wife came to tempt Joseph over and over and over again, and he said no every single time, when Potiphar's wife finally had a little bit of evidence in her favor, she managed to get a hold of his cloak, when she finally had a little bit of evidence in his favor and she showed it to the other servants, the other people in the household, how much credit did Joseph have? Doesn't seem like a lot to me. At the first sign that this lowly, worthless Hebrew slave had taken advantage of his boss's wife, he was sacked. And they all accepted Potiphar's wife's evidence for what it was. And I suppose as Joseph was sitting in his jail cell pondering his predicament, he could very easily have said, well, if what they want is a worthless Hebrew slave who does what he wants and takes advantage of people, if that's the expectation that's been set for me, and if the credit is that little, that it was just a little piece of evidence, I'm thrown into jail, fine, I'll just be what they say I'm going to be. I will be as bitter and as ugly and as jaded as they say I should be. We all know how the story of Joseph turned out. He did not meet those low expectations. And everywhere he went, whether it was as a slave in Potiphar's household or as an inmate in prison, everywhere he went, he was the best person he could be. And he changed everybody's expectations. But like I said earlier in the lesson, one of the things that we face when we, again, whether it's going into high school or college or finishing college and moving to a new city or getting married, every time we enter a new part of life, we have an opportunity to gain some anonymity. And what I mean by that is that you might find yourself for an extended period of time or for the rest of your life in a town where very few people knew you at first. And this brings with it a host of new temptations. And while it's very easy for you to stay out of trouble, or at least easier to stay out of trouble when you're in your hometown where everybody knows you and everybody's watching you, it can lower your inhibitions to be in a totally new town and be an anonymous person, especially going from a smaller town to a bigger town. You can invent a whole life for yourself if you want to. Nobody knows you. Nobody knows your reputation. Nobody knows your past. Nobody knows your parents. You can be anybody that you want. And sometimes the person that you choose to be is not the person that you should be. It's the same philosophy that exists in Las Vegas, right? We all know the tagline, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. What happens in college stays in college. Well, I think you're very naive and foolish if you think the mistakes that you make in Vegas or in college or whatever it is will not have an impact on you for the rest of your life. And here's some things to consider then, some practical applications on this point of anonymity. You can never really get away with anything. Even if you think that you're going somewhere where your parents don't know anybody, your parents know somebody there. I'm sorry. Your parents know somebody, and they have a spy network that they have been building up since the day you were born, anticipating your 18th birthday or your graduation from high school. They know people, and it will get back to them when you've made mistakes, and it will get back to them if you've not been faithful to the Lord, and it will get back to them if you've lived the life of the prodigal son. It will get back to them. Your parents are very perceptive, after all. I know they don't seem like it right now. When I was 17 or 18, I don't know how perceptive I thought my parents were, but I'll tell you what, by the time I'm looking 34 in the face, my mom and dad are just about the smartest people I've ever known. They're very smart. They're perceptive. And I don't think you can get away with a whole lot. Remember the Apostle Peter? He couldn't stay anonymous forever when he denied the Lord three times. As Jesus was facing his death right in the eyes, there's Peter outside warming himself by the fire. And it seemed like in Jerusalem, where nobody should have known Peter, seemed like everybody knew Peter. There's a little girl over here. Hey, don't I know you? Somebody else over here? Yeah. He was one of the followers. Everywhere he went, it seemed like somebody knew who Peter was. He could not remain anonymous. Achan in Joshua chapter 7. Achan tried to hide some gold underneath his tent, gold that was under the ban that he should not have had. He couldn't stay anonymous forever. He couldn't keep his secrets hidden. In 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 10, it says, "We must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that each one may be recompensed for his deeds in the flesh, according to what he has done, whether good or bad." So even if you can pull the wool over everybody else's eyes, you can't ever trick God. Ecclesiastes chapter 12 and verse 14 makes the same point. That at the end of your life, no matter how you fooled everybody else, there's only one thing that matters. God judges you. He judges you for what you've done, and you can't trick Him. But there's also autonomy. From new classmates to professors and guidance counselors to new love interests, you will be told as you get older, moving from one phase of life to the other, that you no longer have to listen to the people that you used to listen to. You don't have to listen to your parents anymore. You don't have to listen to elders anymore. You don't have to listen to the same old authority figures that you used to have to listen to when you were younger and obligated to do it. Otherwise, they'd kick you out of the house, and what are you going to do then? You're going to be told that you don't have to listen. In fact, one of the most important lessons that some college professors will try to teach you when you get to college is that now that you're 18 and independent, you don't have to listen to anything your parents ever tried to teach you. And that it is perfectly okay to reject their wisdom for true wisdom, otherwise known as what that particular professor wants you to believe about something. And parents are made out to be ignorant and backwards and archaic. And rebellion from your parents is, in our day and time, at least so it seems, the rallying cry of the postmodernist intellectual elitist. And yet, Ephesians chapter 6, verses 1 and 2 doesn't have an expiration date, does it? Honor your father and your mother? I don't see that that has any kind of an expiration date. Or that on your diploma it says, and now that you're emancipated, you don't have to honor your father and mother or listen to them or regard their advice or their wisdom. And marriage is the same way. Yes, I know we leave our father and our mother, we cling to our spouse and we become as one. But when dad calls you at some point, don't be afraid to listen. Dads don't quit being dads, by the way, just like moms don't quit being moms. They don't stop. And I think as I get older, the more I appreciate their interjections into my life and my business. But there's also the temptation to waste time. Another first that you're going to face in your life is the freedom of time. While any college student will scoff at this and say that they are busier now than ever, remember that this is a time in your life when you're not going to have somebody looking over your shoulders all the time, keeping you productive. Now, the same is true when you get your first job. You get out of college and you get your first job, and maybe you're used to a little bit of leeway, a little bit of slack given to you. You don't get that in the professional world, just like you didn't get as much of it in college. Quite frankly, I think there are most college students or college professors who don't care if you pass or not. Now, I'm not saying that because I'm bitter or anything like that, or I'm cynical. I just mean that they get paid either way. When you are paying to go to college, they get paid either way. And they're not going to hold you by the hand. And they're not going to give you a bunch of slack all the time and let you get away with things. And your boss won't either. Your boss won't either. I do feel like we have opportunities that present themselves. And if we don't take those opportunities, then we waste those opportunities. You only get one chance for a first impression with a boss. You only get one chance for a first impression with a potential love interest. You have opportunities that are presented to you in a church as well. When you leave college and strike out on your own, yes, I know you're busy. I get it. I understand that. With a job and love interests, I understand that. But you also have an opportunity to involve yourself in a congregation. In a congregation where you're not so-and-so's son or so-and-so's granddaughter. Or I remember you when you were still in diapers. You get to strike out on your own. And that's an opportunity. That is an opportunity that you don't always get in life. You don't get a lot of them either. They don't get a lot of them. You know, your college professor gets paid whether you get a B or an F. And for someone fresh out of college, your boss looks at you as a dime a dozen. I know, you're a millennial. I get it. You have more to offer than any other college grad, right? Any of the tens of thousands of people who got the exact same degree as you. Why shouldn't your boss bend over backwards to accommodate you? But you know what? You're a dime a dozen to some people. You're a dime a dozen. We need to remember that each moment is valuable, just like the Apostle Paul says in Ephesians 5 and verse 16. Time is evil, so don't waste it. Not in the sense that time is some kind of moral evil or time itself, but time is tricky, and time is deceptive. And you really don't have as much of it as you think that you do. Remember the sluggard in the book of Proverbs. In Proverbs chapter 6, verses 6 through 11, or in chapter 24, verses 30 through 34. What's the saying of the sluggard? What does he wear on the t-shirt? Right? What does he have hanging up in his lazy, sloppy, broken-down house? What's the bumper sticker on his car that hasn't had the oil changed in 15,000 miles? A little sleep, a little slumber, and a little folding of the hands to rest. They really ought to. That's my next bumper sticker. That's a bumper sticker that you really need to. You need to slap that onto the Volvo with like 295,000 miles on it, right? A little sleep, a little rest, a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. We've got a responsibility to be good stewards, not just of the things that we have, but of the time that we have as well. And the last point I'll make is this. Putting God in first place. Nothing is more important than God. I don't care how old or young you are. I don't care how important you think you are. Nothing. Nothing is more important than God. And in spite of what so many might say, there is no period in life where you are allowed to put God on the back burner. Now, when your parents are poking you and nudging you in high school to keep you accountable, that's one thing. And you'll go to church to keep them happy. But what's going to happen when you go to college? And what's going to happen when you finish college and you get married? And what's going to happen when you get married and start having kids? And you're trying to balance all of these very important things. There's nothing wrong with college, and there's nothing wrong with marriage. There's nothing wrong with kids. There's nothing wrong with having a great career. There's nothing wrong with any of those things. But where is God going to be in that juggling act? Because here's what often happens. We let things get in the way of God. Like school. And maybe it starts in high school. Starts in high school when you don't get your homework done on a Wednesday afternoon and it gets time to go to Bible class and, well, so-and-so still got to finish his homework. And who ends up winning in the battle of Bible class versus homework? Who ends up winning in that battle? Oftentimes it's the homework. Or the sports practice. Or the TV show. Well, we put school in front of God, don't we? And then we go to college. And then we always justify. We say, well, I'd like to be more involved. I'd like to do more. But you know, my workload is so big, and I've got this class, and I've got this test, and I've got all of these things. Well, here's what happens, though. You might justify it and say, well, school for now. For now, school is more important than God. So I kind of worry about school, and I'll deal with God later. You know, I'll get back into the swing of things after school. But you know, school turns into a job and a job turns into a career. But then you fall in love. Then you fall in love and you pile one more thing on top of it. So then, it's fine. God is still important, but you know, it goes love interests and then work and then God. See, he's still near the top. God is still fairly important in my life. But then after you get married, you start having kids and a family and all those family concerns. And then it's funny how the same excuses that were made for you when you were a kid, you start making the same excuses for your children as well. And all of a sudden, you find yourself halfway through life, and it's, well, yeah, family is the most important thing to me, and marriage is also really important, and obviously my career is really important, and somewhere down below Downton Abbey, right? Or you know, keeping up on my Netflix queue, somewhere around there is still God. He's still more important than remembering my aunt's sister's boss's birthday. And the more stuff you pile on top of God, the lower down the list He actually is of your priorities. Which is why I say keep God at the top of the list forever. Because if school is not more important than God, marriage is not more important than God, as great as it is. Family is not more important than God, because Jesus Himself even said, "He who loves father or mother, husband or wife, son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me." Certainly, your job isn't more important. And Netflix, come on, is definitely not more important than God. And this starts right now. It starts when you go from middle school to high school. And it starts if you're going from high school to college. And if you're going from college to a profession, start it now. And if you're looking at marriage in the near future, you have to decide now that God is the most important thing. And if you're about to have a baby, God is still more important than even that. And if you can start that right now, well, you just might do okay. Now, if you're not a Christian, that's the first step that you've got to take. Before any of this other stuff means anything, you have got to become a Christian. Listen to Mark 16, verse 16. "He who believes and is baptized shall be saved." So if the invitation to obey applies to you in any way, then please come forward as we stand.